There are inherent challenges to the process of stepping down from a leadership position, particularly in relating to the person who then takes up that position. That's why I feel so very fortunate that my next guest, who is in fact taking the helm of Interfaith Alliance, is Rabbi Jack Moline. Jack and I have worked closely together for many years on issues of faith and freedom. In the months ahead, Jack will be in regular presence on State of Belief Radio, sharing the initiatives of an organization that plays such a key role at the intersection of religion, government, and politics. But this week, I want to focus on Jack Moline, introducing him to those of you who are not familiar with his decades of activism and leadership in our nation's capital and beyond. So with that, I'd like to welcome Rabbi Jack Moline. He's the new executive director of Interfaith Alliance to State of Belief Radio.
Well, thank you, Welton. It's nice to be here again.
I'd like for you to start with just a brief summary of the work that you've done through the years, both in the secular realm and in the religious realm.
Well, until about a year ago, I served in my adult life primarily as a congregational rabbi. I was ordained by the Jewish Theological Seminary. I'm a conservative rabbi. And for 35 years, I led two different congregations, 7 years in Danbury, Connecticut, and the balance of the time in Alexandria, Virginia, where I am still an active member of that congregation. I spent a year working with a political organization until this opportunity presented itself. So professionally, that's sort of the trajectory of my career. But how I wound up at Interfaith Alliance has to do with the interest that I've had since really I was a teenager in being engaged in the welfare of the society in which I am a participant. And I have been active in social justice causes that have particular connections to the Jewish community, as well as organizations like Interfaith Alliance, Faith and Politics Institute, and others, which take a broader view of society and seek to bring the wisdom of these various traditions together.
Jack, as a conservative rabbi, does interreligious engagement come to you naturally, or is it unusual for a conservative rabbi to be involved in interreligious engagement?
Well, one of my earliest memories of growing up in my synagogue in the Chicago area was the interfaith Thanksgiving service that we had with the Congregational Church, which took us in when our building was under construction. And so for a long time, I only saw it as natural that communities of faith should cooperate with each other and, in fact, welcome each other into their precincts. So this is genuinely something that is organic in my life.
When you went into very specific kinds of interreligious engagement, was that with the blessing of your congregation, or was it viewed with question, or how did that work?
Well, you and I, both as pastors of congregations, know that there are as many opinions in a congregation as there are members, sometimes even more. So mostly I was encouraged tremendously by the people in my congregation. Of course, there were people who shared the prejudices of that we find in the rest of society, who would express concerns if I was sitting down with people who were to the very far right of the Christian spectrum, or people who did not sufficiently endorse certain values that the Jewish community had from the Muslim community, and even those who came from traditions that some of the more right-wing members of my congregation thought might represent more pagan influences than they'd be comfortable with. But I was able to say to each of them that every child of God has something to teach me, and I'm not about to turn away from someone just because you don't like what you think they stand for.
Yeah. I know your family. I want you to tell our listeners about what it's been like to have two great daughters and a great son and a wife that you probably don't deserve.
I definitely married up. I say that all the time. look, you know as well as I do, and particularly with the ups and downs that you've gone through in your life, Welton, that there's nothing more important than having someone to come home to and having people who will be honest with you and reflecting back to you what you're trying to represent to the people you have the most influence on. Mm-hmm. So my wife has been the greatest protector of my well-being that I could possibly imagine, as well as someone who is always willing to challenge my thought process and keep me honest. I love her to pieces. I have three genuinely amazing children. My son, Max, is about to embark on a career with the federal government. He's being vetted now for a position he's been offered with FEMA, where he will be a communications specialist. He graduated from Northwestern a couple of years ago and has been doing a lot of work politically. His first jobs were on campaigns when he graduated. My daughter Julia just completed a master's degree in engineering and public policy. She has a specialty in emergency management and disaster recovery. She also works for FEMA in a different division than Max will be working, and is trying to particularly right now help people who have been the victims of natural phenomena like Sandy and other such things. She got her start interning for Nancy Pelosi many years ago and was really affected by the Katrina debacle in New Orleans. And my daughter Jenny is the Deputy Secretary of Education for the Commonwealth of Virginia, a position that she earned having worked for first Governor and then Senator Tim Kaine. So she's doing amazing stuff. And my son-in-law, her husband, is the Chief of Staff for the Attorney General of Virginia, Mark Herring, who's just been doing remarkable stuff in the Commonwealth. So, in fact, when I left the pulpit to do some political work, one of my friends said to me, "So you're following in your children's footsteps?" And I was very, very proud to hear that.
Yeah. When you look back over your career, what one or two moments kind of stand out in your mind as interreligious moments that are meaningful for the rest of your life?
September 11th, 2001 was a remarkable day for all of America in some pretty awful ways, but on the other hand, in some very important ways. The first phone call that I made after I was certain that my family members were okay in the various places they were was to an imam who served with me at the time on Interfaith Alliance's board of directors, Mahdi Bray. And I just wanted to make sure he was okay because I knew what was going on in the hearts of America that day regarding the Muslim community. And Mahdi was and is a very outspoken advocate of concerns for his community. Mm-hmm. The bond that created between us, well, continues to this day. Imam Bray has had some serious health problems, but he never misses an opportunity to reach out to me, both in happy occasions. I just last month got Hanukkah greetings from him. And if anything happens that he knows is going to touch my heart in the Jewish community, he makes sure that I know he's thinking about me and vice versa. Mm-hmm. That had a profound effect on me, and it only redoubled my insistence that the only way we're going to get through all the troubles in this world is together and not by dividing ourselves up into good guys and bad guys.
Right. You had the opportunity the last time there was a papal visit to the United States to be involved in that.
I was very, very honored to meet Pope Benedict when he came to Washington a few years ago. And my congregation was impressed, but my Catholic neighbors, you know, considered me a superstar. There were actually people who came by to shake the hand that shook the hand of the Pope. So I was very flattered by that and very honored by that.
Jack, you represented Interfaith Alliance at the President's State of the Union address. I'm curious, what impressions did you take away from that speech?
I was very impressed that the president was remarkably relaxed, where he could have been very tense coming in to talk to Congress after the elections of late last year. He was clear in his agenda, and he was willing to engage Congress on his own terms.
Did you feel any difference in the crowd around you than what would have been true for previous States of the Union?
Well, it's a little unfair for me to say that because I was in the White House in the midst of a group of invited guests. So I think that the crowd was a ringer in that regard. But I think that there were more genuine applause lines in the president's speech than the usual helping of them that any president gets because they're aimed at partisan causes. I think he really talked about values and principles more than he did about political gain.
And I thought it was one of the most pro-democratic State of the Union address that I had heard from the standpoint of the basic core values of democracy.
He talked about values and principles, and I was very impressed by that. He didn't talk quite so much about politics, except to offer a well-deserved chastisement to himself and to Congress for getting too bogged down in the politics of the process rather than the care for the American people.
Yeah. I found the focus on religious liberty in terms of freedom, not in terms of the right to discriminate, very refreshing and very encouraging. Did you get that same feeling?
I really did. And the other thing that impressed me about that, Welton, is that while he spent an awful lot of time justifying his economic vision, he simply stated as truth what those principles are. So he did not have to go into a long explanation of why it was important to protect the rights of people of different faiths, and he didn't even have to go into a justification for same-sex marriage. He simply stated them as a fact, and judging from the response of the people in the room with him and the people in the room with me, they accepted them as fact as well.
For many years, Rabbi Jack Moline led the Agudas Akim congregation in Alexandria, Virginia. He has held leadership and advisory roles in numerous organizations. This month, he takes on the role of executive director at Interfaith Alliance. Jack, delighted to have you on the show today. Let me wish you nothing but success in your new position, and I look forward to having you back with us again soon.
Thank you, Welton.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. The ongoing financial support of State of Belief listeners is essential to keeping this show on the air. A big thank you to listeners who've made a donation this week. If you find value in what we're doing, then I urge you to join our other generous supporters today. We'd love to hear from you. Please visit stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stateofbelief.com is also where you can sign up for our free weekly podcast. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/stateofbelief. And share the stories you find here that you find compelling. Share them with your friends. The same goes for Twitter. We're at twitter.com/stateofbelief. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy, that State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see, he was.